WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi. Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to this special edition of Monday Night Talk, your holiday edition, Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. And our next guests are joining me. From the City of Champions, we have a good friend, Isabel Lopez. She's the lead organizer for the Brockton Interfaith Community. She's no stranger to this program. Welcome back to the program, Isabel.
Thank you so much.
And you have a very distinguished gentleman that you have suggested, because I said when we were talking about this conversation, you had suggested this gentleman, Reverend Dr. Abraham Waya. Did I say that correct, Reverend?
Indeed, correct. Thank you.
What made you decide that the Reverend was a great individual to be a part of this conversation?
Well, Dr. Reverend Abraham Waya, he has been playing a very important role making the congregations, three congregations in Brockton, available to be sanctuaries, sanctuary churches for people in need.
And we should mention those particular organizations or churches. That is the Central Methodist United, correct?
United Methodist.
United Methodist. Yes. Thank you very much, Reverend. The Pearl Street United Methodist, is that correct? Mm-hmm. And then the Pentecost Building, which I think is a division of one of these other two, right?
It is a part of Central, yes.
Okay. And so I think the idea of having a conversation with the three of us here, and we've already promised we're going to have another one in the next 30 to 60 days, mm-hmm. Depending on what happens with the new administration down in Washington. We know it's just later on this week. We will see the gentleman who is the president-elect drop the elect from his name. And I know that the City of Champions, Brockton, there are five churches that have said, there was a big press release, that what's going to happen, depending on what this administration does in regards to the immigration situation. There were promises during the presidential race about deporting people who were not here legally. That there are five organizations, three of them which you oversee, Reverend, that will be a place for folks who are in fear of, or folks who may not are not here legally and want to seek a legal means to be here in this country, for them to at least be able to come, to be able to go to, correct?
Correct.
What led to that determination to say, we need to make sure that folks who are still trying to find a way to be here legally, yet, you know, not be prematurely shown the door from our country? What led to that decision to say, I want my three congregations to be part of this?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here and share with you what our churches are doing. this is not just a response to President-elect Trump. There has been this need in this country for many years, so this is not new. But what is important at this time is because many people are so afraid, we feel there's a need to give them a place where they can take a breather. So people who are concerned about their families, if you have a child at school and immigration and customs enforcement comes after you, what do you do? What do you do with your bank account? What do you do with your spouse? What do you do with your job? What do you do with many other things? And people tend to panic. The idea of the church is a place where you can come, take a breather. The church is not going to keep you in the country. The church is only going to allow you opportunity to unwind and assist you with legal assistance to go through the process, the legal process. You may have to decide at some point that, you know, maybe I need to leave, but that will be your decision in a calm atmosphere. You've taken care of your children, you've taken care of your spouse, you've taken care of your finances and other things, but you can do that at the church instead of being at a detention center.
Instead of it being in an abrupt manner as what was promised during the presidential campaign.
Exactly, yes.
I want to kind of turn to you, Isabel, just for a quick moment. I know that there's been an ongoing conversation. I want to say that there was something held last week in regards to the city of Brockton, the Trust Act. Does this play a role in this conversation?
Of course, you know, many cities across the United States and in the state of Massachusetts, about five different cities have passed different trust acts. In Boston, Lawrence, Cambridge, Somerville are among those cities that have passed trust acts. And this came right after President Obama announced that there was going to be more race back in 2015. We had a vigil with our community of faith, and many of our immigrant undocumented community came to us afraid that they were going to be separated from their families and clergy from the community. Brockton Interfaith Community is led by the clergy, and clergy came up a front and said, we are not going to let this happen, because for us as communities of faith, our moral and values are the most important thing.
If I could ask real quick, is there confusion as to what exactly the Trust Act is? What is the edict behind the Trust Act, if either one of you would want to take the ball and run with it for a moment?
Well, the Trust Act is not the same as the sanctuary.
Okay. Right?
The idea of the Trust Act is to get the people and the police teaming up together. It's not about anything else. It's not about deportation. It's so that there is trust between the local police and the local community. If you are a victim of a crime, you should not be afraid calling the police because you think the police is going to ask you about your immigration status, or if you are a witness to a crime. So the act is to encourage the police to, the city will agree that the police will not ask you about your immigration status when they're pursuing a criminal issue, so that you are not anxious about the crime and also anxious about your immigration status. And I think then that allows people to tell the police what they witness. Because if you witness a crime and you're afraid that mm-hmm. the police will ask you about your immigration status, then you don't divulge information. You say, I don't speak English.
Right.
But if you know that there's nothing to be afraid of about your status, then you will freely share with the police what you saw. And that enables them to keep our communities safer. Rather than people being afraid and then not telling the police. So I think that's what the Trust Act is about.
And we're speaking with Isabel Lopez. She's a lead organizer with the Brockton Interfaith Community, and Reverend Dr. Abraham Waya. And we're kind of talking about immigration, talking about the Trust Act, talking about sanctuary cities, differences between sanctuary cities and sanctuary churches. We'll get back to that in just a moment, but I want to kind of stay on the criminal or the crime act, because a lot of people who have issues or having conversations on social media, one of the things that they're concerned with is if in fact churches are kind of a safe haven until folks can gather themselves in regards to immigration and the situation under the new president and the new administration. Where does it stand if there's an individual who is a known criminal, who has a criminal record, who is sought by the authorities? Will they also be given safe haven? Or is it a matter of saying, if in fact somebody of those five congregations knows, those five churches knows that that individual is in fact wanted, that they're not going to be wanted by the church, or will they be accepted?
So let me clear this up for anyone who might be thinking that the sanctuary is for people who have committed crimes. It is not. If you have committed a crime, citizen or not, documented or not, the local police or the FBI will be the ones hunting you down. And they have a right to come to the church, and we will do absolutely everything in our power to support law enforcement to carry out the law when you have committed a crime. If you are afraid of your citizenship, I mean your status, your documentation status in the country, it is most likely ICE that will be coming after you, that is Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And the relationship between those and the police and the FBI is not the same. So if you're a criminal, the FBI and the police will come. If you come to our buildings and we open the door and you get in, and the police come to the door and say, we're chasing a criminal and that's that person, our job is to negotiate with the police to hand you over. We're not going to keep you. We don't want them to come in guns blazing. But sometimes the criminal that gets in the building becomes a problem. So we want the police to be able to come and enforce the law. If your only concern is about documentation, you know, the law of the United States says being here undocumented is not a crime in itself. That's why it's ICE that is coming after you, not the FBI. But if the FBI or the police are coming, we'll negotiate your surrender or arrange somehow for you to get to be taken by the police. We have a legal system in this country that we trust. So that's, we'll send you to the police.
Excellent. I want to kind of digress for half a second back to our discussion regarding sanctuary cities and sanctuary churches. I would ask you, Isabel, and if, Reverend, you want to kind of follow up with an answer as well, because I think you both probably want to kind of chime in on this. Do you feel that there's a confusion and that folks don't know the difference between sanctuary cities and sanctuary churches?
I think that there is a lot of confusion because sanctuary cities are, you know, are a different, in a different position than sanctuary churches. Sanctuary cities are, you know, ordinances or laws are passed by local officials, by legislators, by city councilors. For example, we have Newton, who's coming as sanctuary city, and it is not done by clergy. Sanctuary churches are safe haven for people to come and, you know, and be protected, basically.
Reverend?
Yeah, thank you. So the sanctuary city, as Isabel just said, the sanctuary city means that the city has declared that they would not, the city police, which is usually local, will not collaborate with ICE to evict their undocumented citizens. So you stay where you are, undocumented immigrants. You stay where you are. They just will not cooperate with ICE to get you out. The sanctuary church, on the other hand, is a place where if you are threatened, and you happen to be in a place where there's no sanctuary city, right? So the police can come to your house. I mean, the ICE can come to your house. If you're in such a town, you can come to the church, and now the church gives you shelter because ICE policy says that they cannot enforce immigration in the church. So if you come to the church, then you are safe. They won't come by their own policy, so that's all right.
They're safe in the house of worship.
They are safe in the house of worship, yes.
Okay. Watching what's going to happen later on this week with the new president being sworn in, is the immigration population in the city of Brockton, do you feel that the folks who are kind of nervous about what's going to happen once we have a new president in place, a person who's made promises, I'm going to build a wall, I am going to deport some 11 to 13 million illegal immigrants. Do you feel that people are kind of watching and waiting to see what's going to take place once Donald Trump moves into the White House, Isabel?
Yes, indeed, there is, you know, a lot of families that live in Brockton that have, you know, they have come to us worried that when the new administration takes place, that yes, you know, something that might happen to them. And most of them, you know, we're trying to get them, you know, educated to learn about what are the rights and what they can do if they feel threatened, in that separation from their families is the number one priority. Many of them do not care about the jobs per se, but they care more about their children. And I think that it's so important that, you know, the general public know that in the United States, who cleans their homes, who's taking care of our elderly, who's taking care of the children in the schools, who's taking care of people in the hospices. It's our immigrant community, and we cannot, and especially at the border in California, who's picking up all our vegetables. These are going to be jobs that are going to be left empty, and I think that is so important to go back to the reality that we face. Our immigrant community is the backbone that is keeping this country with the economics, and I think that we cannot hide that.
Well, we are an immigration country. All of our relatives came over here in some form or fashion, and you know what? It wasn't just immediately that they were in a position of power, but that as immigrant communities have come here, it doesn't matter who it is, whether it's the Swedes, the Irish, the Italian, you name it, from South America, from Africa, you name the continent, that folks have come over here, that they have all taken their place and found ways to be a part of the community, the culture, and it doesn't matter whether it's somebody who's picking vegetables, somebody who is elected to city council, or somebody who eventually one day becomes a member of Congress or the Senate.
Yeah. So it's really interesting about many of the people that we consider undocumented. Overwhelming majority of them, first of all, came here legally, right? You came in by air, or you came in. You're not going to find anybody who swam the ocean from Africa to sneak under the borders into the United States, right? So it doesn't happen that way. Paperwork sometimes goes wrong, and things just don't fly the way you thought they would, and then you realize suddenly I'm undocumented. So I think that that's something to consider when we look at the people who are here. But let me say something about our president, president-elect now, but will be soon, President Trump. I respect his business acumen. I would like to think it'll be contrary to that acumen to load up 13 million people, 11 to 13 million people, and get them out of this country. If that is to ever happen, none of us will be able to buy food. The cost will be prohibitive. And there are just many things that just won't happen. Just the cost of taking this many people out of this country, whether it's by air, by train, by bus, by boat, whatever, will add to our debt in a way that I don't think he wants to do. So I would like to trust that he is smart enough and would not carry out all the things he said he would. But should he decide to insist on it, he would find churches and communities that would say, we love these people because they are people just like us, and we are all part of a great and growing nation, and we would not want to see this happen.
To be a part of the American dream.
Exactly.
That's why that's why our relatives, our families came here, to be a part of the American dream.
And this we are building this American dream. It's being built. Right. So we're excited about what we can do. But I trust that the president will use good judgment.
I think it's also important to know that on Thursday, the majority of the families that were in the room, they were talking about,
the form you had at Sandy the Stein, right?
Yep. Yes. And, many of us bring skills and talents, and this is what we're using. I am personally here as any other immigrant, many other immigrants working to help others. I don't care where you're from. I am here to support you and to help you and to serve you because I was called to serve and God's children. So I think that, when we take a look at people, let's take a look at people with our heart and not just with something that, it's so erroneous to look at human beings. We look at everyone as God creation, as the Bible calls us, taking care of our brothers and sisters.
I definitely agree, but I also believe that there are rules. There are rules to be followed, and I think that everybody, however you got here, is fine. But I think if you're going to be part of the culture, you follow whatever the rules are of the culture. Don't try to change the culture from the culture that you came from. And if it is to be here legally, to be a part of a citizen of the country, then you find a way to do that, whether you're new here or not. And you know what? I'm willing to see folks who are undocumented find their way to be here legally. And then if they are unwilling to do that, well, then we worry about the next step. We've plumb run out of time for this particular segment, but we have promised, as I said at the beginning, that we're going to revisit this on Monday Night Talk. Reverend, I want to thank you for coming.
Thank you
very much. And Isabel as well. Any information we want to give out to folks who are listening, whether they're listening now live here on Monday Night Talk here, 95.9 WATD, or if they listen to the podcast later, somebody wants information about the conversation, or if they want to reach out to one of the five congregations or want to get more information, how can they do that?
Well, if you go to mybrocktonumc.org, you would find a lot of information there, including just flyers you can print out and keep in your room if you are concerned. Or you can call 508-233-2770. And that number is dedicated just to answer people who are afraid, and we can help them. You don't have to come into the building. We can get legal assistance to meet you wherever possible. So 508-233-2770.
Isabel?
And if anyone would like to get informed, educated, or would like to get involved, they can call the Brockton Interfaith Community at 508-587-9550. And then they also can reach us at BrocktonInterfaithCommunity.org.
You both were fantastic guests. I want to thank you very much for coming here to the radio program. And we definitely will look forward to talking to you and revisiting this and even talking a little bit. We can kind of critique as to where things stand with our new president and what he's doing in regards to some of the policies he's setting, whether it's with immigration or other things that are going on with his administration to hopefully make our country better.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Many of us are transferring the next weekend to join a 1 million march in D.C. So this is not ending here. This is inspiring many of us, many new folks to come on board. So we thank you so much for having us in your program.
You got it.
Thank you so much, Kevin. We really, really appreciate it. And we actually wish Trump success in his administration. But thank you so much for the opportunity.
You got it. There he is, Reverend Dr.
Yes.
Abraham Waya and Isabel Lopez, our guests for this segment. We're going to step aside just for a couple of moments, but when we come back, we're going to have a very special one-hour segment. We're talking everything Weymouth. We'll have Mayor Bob Hedlund. We'll have State Senator and Town Council President Patrick O'Connor and Becky Haw. And talking about everything Weymouth coming up here on Monday Night Talk, heard only on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com, the South Shore's news, weather, and traffic station. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, Chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
weight loss.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, and we thank Isabel and the Reverend for being our guest on that last segment. Now we talk everything Weymouth, so to speak. So we have joining us Rebecca Hull.
Ha.
I'm going to mess it up six more times, as long as you forgive me now. And do you like Rebecca or Becky?
I usually go by Becky.
All right, Rebecca, kind of like if your mother's scolding you kind of a thing.
Correct.
All right, just checking. Okay. All right, it's like Kevin Richard, you know.
Yep.
So I got you. And we have a guy who wears two hats. He is your state senator and also town council president, Patrick O'Connor, is here.
Good evening, Kevin.
Welcome back to the program. Thank you very much for being here, being a part of this. Now, I will tell you, as the person who's the main facilitator, who is supposed to be a part of this, we're hoping that he'll join us on the phone line, and that's none other than Mayor Bob Hedlund. We're hoping that we will hear from him at some point, whether we call him or he calls us. If not, I think we're okay. I think we can.
There's a missing mic, or there's a microphone here, but there's just somebody missing that's supposed to be there. I'd assume.
Actually, there's like one of those first aid safety blow up things that was going to kind of stick there, just so we would at least. But so we'll see what happens. Again, the mayor is supposed to join us at some point in time to kind of complete the circle. He wanted to kind of co-host the segment. He was the one who had the idea. I don't know if it's because he heard Mayor Joe Sullivan from Braintree had come on not too long ago, I want to say 3-4 months ago, when he co-hosted the show. And you know how mayors kind of get jealous and envious of each other. So, again, and let's not forget, Bob Hedlund is the original co-host. Actually, the original host. I should call it the co-host. The original host of Monday Night Talk. So I can see why he'd want to jump back behind the microphone. He loved doing this, but, you know, he kind of got busy. He's a busy guy. He's somebody who has been active not only as a legislator, but somebody now who is the mayor of Weymouth. What has it been like for you guys in regards? We'll start with you, Senator, and that is, you know, you're wearing two hats. It's not an easy job. You'll be up in Boston, and you come back down to.
And I have a year left on the term when I ran for re-election for the city council. Voters had asked if I planned to, you know, keep my promise and make sure that I would stay with the seat the entire 2 years. So I said yes. So wearing two hats has been interesting. the mayor, I think, has done a great job. I come from an interesting perspective where I worked for then Senator Hedlund for 9 years, and now seeing him for the past 12 months as our mayor, I think that it's been eye-opening, and I think that he's been very successful. I think we've been able to accomplish quite a bit working together collaboratively, myself up at the State House trying to secure grants for not only Weymouth but all the 8 communities I represent, and then working on the town council level with my colleagues such as Becky Ha, making sure that we do the work that's necessary that the mayor has presented to us, and I think it's led to quite a bit of accomplishments over the past year.
Becky, this is your chance to kind of weigh in and give your thoughts as a town councilor.
Sure. I've had nothing but positive experiences with Bob Hedlund as mayor the past year. One thing I can say is he's just so energetic, and I think it is what the town needed.
Tough to keep up with.
Definitely. I mean, you know, he just keeps presenting project after project after project, and he's almost like the Energizer Bunny of Weymouth, and he just keeps on going. But I think it's what we need, you know, honestly. There's a lot that needs to be done in Weymouth, and he just keeps the momentum going, and being on the council, I see it firsthand, and I just hope that momentum continues. And I think it's great to have a fresh face such as Senator O'Connor to take his reign. I mean, he had so much experience working with him for 9 years that now I think we're just in a great place as a whole.
It's like on-the-job training, being right there. And speaking of the EB himself banging the drum, I believe joining us on the phone line is Mayor Bob Hedlund. Mayor, are you there?
I am.
How goes it?
Well, listening to your show for the last minute, it goes great. I think you guys probably knew I was on the line, so they decided to throw those bouquets out.
We could say bad things about you if you want. Knowing that you're at a distance, there's not much harm you could do. We just sit here and eat pizza and you know, say. But I've heard that from following things. Social media, it could be, you know, people have no restraint on social media. And I think that if there were things that weren't going well in the community of Weymouth, I think you would have known by now, Mayor, wouldn't you?
We got a couple of malcontents out there, but no, it's been pretty good feedback, and I do appreciate the kind words from the councilors and senator, especially coming from the most active, energetic councilor, calling me the Energizer Bunny. She kind of makes me feel fatigued when I watch her energy level, so I appreciate that.
If you guys could each weigh in, and we'll start with Becky, what would you say were, if you took 2016 and kind of did a year in review, what are some of the top things that come to mind that you guys were able to accomplish collectively as elected leaders?
Well, I think number one would have to be the fight against Spectra and their proposed compressor station in the pipeline in Weymouth. And I'm not sure if we're going to touch on that later on. But I also want to mention, because it kind of gets hidden a lot, was the budget of this year. For numerous years in Weymouth, we've sort of had a tumultuous budget. And this was probably one of the first years where it was just a good, solid budget. You know, we were able to add education funding. And I just thought that was a big highlight that might have gotten overshadowed with some of the other things going on in town.
Senator?
Yeah, I'll go ahead.
So I'm just going with the people who are in front of me, Mayor.
I'd say that obviously the budget was a huge success. I think that the sidewalk program was a huge success. Emory Estate finally has some work getting done there. The field program that we were able to invest in through a capital project, which has been far long overdue, and also landing the landing ProDrive at Union Point, which is going to be the first major tenant, and also a company that is coming from the Netherlands, setting up their U.S. operation in Weymouth, creating an estimated 500 jobs over 10 years, and I believe that's going to be the economic engine and job creation for the entire South Shore that stretches further out than Weymouth, and Weymouth's going to capitalize on the tax revenue. So I think that we've had a whole host of accomplishments this year, and I agree with Councilor Haw that, you know, the budget definitely got overshadowed because we have had years where it is pulling out hair to try to form a budget, get a budget that we all agree on, and this year it just worked.
Now, Mayor, I know you're a big softball guy. I figure that you'd like being in the three or the four hole to be able to drive a few runs home. So anything that Becky or the senator forgot to bring up?
No, I was actually going to correct Becky, depending upon how you worded the question. You didn't say... I don't think you posed the question that said the biggest achievement. I think you said the biggest issue, which definitely was Spectre. If you want to talk achievements, I think they covered most. I think certainly the issue with ProDrive is significant. And, of course, they both talked about the budget. I wasn't there for those previous budget discussions, but we knew there was a lot of frustration, and we just kind of changed the approach we took and the general practice that had occurred, and how we looked at free cash and how we, you know, tried to cultivate a relationship with the schools when it comes to budgeting. And that's an ongoing process. We think there's some room for improvement in the way that we do fund the schools in Weymouth, but at least we're going in the right direction now.
I have to ask this because I cover other communities, whether it's a, you know, town administrator and selectman, or you get the city of Brockton where you have a mayor and you have city councilors. What's the working relationship between the mayor and the town council, Mayor?
Well, I talked about that a lot in the campaign last year because I think there were some rough patches between the previous administration and the council. And, you know, I talked about the fact that I served in the legislative branch for 20 years, so I would bring that approach. We've tried to make sure there's a good working relationship. Sometimes... it can be communication breakdowns, and I know that some councilors have had some critiques along the way. So despite our 20 years in the legislature, there's certainly been a little bit of a learning curve in, you know, getting to know the areas that individual counselors, you know, have concerns about and where they want to see that level of communication. And sometimes, you know, we'll reach out and they're not interested, and other times we forget to reach out and it's something that was of interest. So that's been an ongoing process, and we look to keep the, you know, the relations positive.
Senator?
Yeah, no, I think that we've been able to have a good working relationship as far as the city council perspective and the state senate perspective. You know, everything's always a work in progress when it comes to government, and I don't think that you can ever get it 100% right, but I think being able to make mistakes and correct those mistakes and try to do as much as you possibly can to make everyone feel like they're part of a team is exactly what Mayor Hedlund's doing.
And it's interesting you said that, because I should probably rephrase that, because yours is a two-prong approach, because not only is it on the town level, but yeah, you're on the state level, and you've two different levels of communications and making sure that you and your staff don't mix things up between what's going on town council-wise and what's going on up at the Senate. But again, you kind of spelled it out.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting. It's not unique. There's been other senators who have also worn the same hat. I don't know of any that's currently that served as president as well. But, you know, it's a balancing act, but being the president for the past 3 years has been able to, you know, allow me to figure out that job pretty well, I'd say. And now going to the Senate, it's making sure that I represent all eight towns equally and make sure that I provide the best representation that they possibly can get up on Beacon Hill.
Counselor?
Sure. You know, I think just like Mayor Hedlund said, communication is the biggest thing. I can see maybe his frustrations. There are 11 of us, and we all have our own individual interests and needs for our own districts and areas of Weymouth we represent. But I think, you know, he's doing a good job reaching out to all of us when he needs to, and I hope, you know, we're doing the same to him, reaching out when we need something or, you know, want to be more informed about the issues that are facing our district.
How about constructive criticism, though? I mean, are you guys able, is it something that all three of you are able to be able to take, whether it's in one-on-one or if it's something that's put out in the media? Now, I don't see much as far as any criticism that's levied the mayor towards the town council or any town councilors towards the mayor, but in other communities, you see that from time to time. Any time that you get criticism or you've given criticism and there's good conversation, or has that not happened yet? Mayor?
I could show you my message thread on my phone.
Okay.
You know, we've had, you know, some differing opinions or some frustrations here and there with a couple counselors, but, you know, overall I'd say it's been positive, and like I said in the previous question, we're still finding our way in terms of, you know, the areas that we want to make sure that we're communicating and the areas of expertise or the areas that different counselors have that significant interest. We want to make sure that we stay on top of that.
So there's still a honeymoon period.
By the way, the open meeting law gets in the way a little bit. So if I want to spend time to brief counselors, for instance, when we did our field rehab initiative, we wanted to brief counselors as to what the plan was in advance, but we have to do it in separate meetings because of concerns with the open meeting law and the number of counselors I can talk to outside of the council chamber at any given time. So
I know
that comes into play.
Okay. Anybody else want to kind of weigh in on as far as constructive criticism and how you guys have been able to deal with it, whether it's speaking one-on-one with each other as counselor to counselor, senator to counselor, mayor to senator, however it may work out?
I think that the council as a whole is an unbelievable organization that's been brought up of really talented people. I think that the mayor has established his administration with extremely talented people. There's obviously going to be disagreements and policy disagreements and you know, potential ways of communicating, but at the end of the day, we're all in this to do what's best for Weymouth, and I think we've been able to, in the past 12 months, succeed at that.
Counselor?
Oh, I agree with the senator. I think the town council right now is an awesome dynamic. We have pretty much every range of demographic you can imagine, and I think all of us, for the most part, have a nice open door policy with each other. You know, if, like the mayor said, if I have an issue, I can text them, vice versa. And I think even if we do disagree, we still have that communication. And I think that's what's important at the end of the day, is even if we don't agree, we have that open communication with each other. And that's what, you know, is keeping us going strong.
We should probably take a couple of months.
And judging from those texts, the question is, when does the counselor sleep?
Which counselor?
The Energizer Bunny one that you've got there.
Is that you, Becky?
Yeah, I just drink a lot of coffee. I don't need to sleep. I'm from North Weymouth.
Okay. Didn't know it was something that was derivative of North Weymouth, but something good to know. Something that you had brought up, counselor, and I think that maybe we should take a couple of minutes to talk about. I mean, one of the top issues probably the past couple of years, and that is the compressor station. What's your thoughts as to where things stand at this particular moment? We'll start with you, Counselor.
Sure. Honestly, I don't know where we currently stand. The next FERC Commission meeting is this Thursday, and our first project, Atlantic Bridge, is not on the agenda. So the next meeting will be for another month. So we're honestly just keeping our eyes and ears open on everything FERC. I'm not sure if any other town has ever done that. And as long as Atlantic Bridge is not up on the next commission meeting, that means a decision will not be ruled whether or not a compressor station is voted to be built here or not by them.
Yeah, I mean, Becky's been leading the charge on this for 22 months, and it's really admirable what she's done, what the Frax group has done, what all these organizations coming together to try and fight something that is just absolutely absurd, that they think that they can propose a compressor station in such a highly residential area as the location that they cited. And it's a community against big energy, and I think that truly our community is winning this, and we'll continue to fight strong under Councillor Haw's leadership, under the mayor's leadership, and I really think that this is something that can be achievable because of how outrageous the location is that they're citing this in.
Mayor?
Well, I agree with both of the councilors and what's been said. It's been a lengthy battle, and you know, we've taken an aggressive stance on a number of fronts, more so than any community, you know, has in a fight like this, the siting of a compressor station like this. You know, it's not just on the siting itself. I mean, one strategy we had after putting up a very strong defense was negotiating a very significant post-community agreement with them, a mitigation package. We clearly, it was not received by the community and the council, continued the fight. And we've been very fortunate with outside counsel and with what Solicitor Callanan has done in terms of tactics. We think, you know, we've delayed this somewhat. And you know, Councilor O'Connor and Senator O'Connor talks about, you know, it's a fight between the community and big energy. It's not just big energy, it's big government, too. I mean, the way FERC is set up, it's a pro-industry regulator. It's really an enabler, not a regulator, and that's making this fight extremely frustrating.
What's the next step? I mean, can they exhaust? Is there a number of options that they have to exhaust before they throw their hands up, or is there ultimately that they try to outlast the communities financially before it's cited and built?
I don't think they have to outlast us financially. That's easy for them to do.
Okay.
You know, they just have time on their side in terms of the process. Time has helped us somewhat, you know, because of market conditions.
Mm-hmm.
and somewhat how the market has changed the makeup of the you know, of the market for them, so that has helped us. But you know, the process just from start to finish is one that is stacked in favor of the proponent.
Anything else?
I think I'm not sure how in depth you know about FERC, but right now there's actually only 3 sitting commissioners out of 5. And now with President Trump going to be sworn in, he has the ability to pick 2 new ones. But traditionally, a lot of the commissioners sometimes resign and let the incoming presidents actually pick
a new board.
Whole new board. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, the current ones, they still have time left on their term. So whether or not they're actually going to do that or not, obviously they don't have to. They were appointed. They can serve out their term. But it will be interesting to keep watching that process and whether or not they're going to stick around and who President-elect Trump will pick for the other two vacant seats right now.
I would wonder how much of a priority that really would be on the president-elect, soon-to-be president, where it would, I mean, what do you see as far as a timeline? Are we talking about maybe towards the end of the year, after the fiscal year? I mean, do we have any idea when we may see a decision regarding whether he'll appoint two people?
I think that's a great question, Kevin, and I think with when you see, you know, an administration go from one party to the other, never mind the huge ideological divide from one administration to the other, usually for them to get this far down the line in terms of significant appointments, it usually takes a while.
Right.
So I wouldn't think you're going to see something too immediate unless someone in some position of power has, shall we say, an interest in this particular commission and the industry itself. So that could change the dynamics of that. But I think if you look at history and the amount of time where it takes to make changes at this level down in the bureaucracy, I think you'd find that it takes some time, you know, a year or so, I would guess. But that may be a different case in this. If someone has some interest in it.
Okay. Besides the compressor station, is there another pressing issue such as this, or would you guys say this is the top issue at this particular time?
I mean, it's definitely the top issue that's facing Weymouth, and especially the top issue facing North Weymouth. I think that we have a whole host of issues that have a lot of importance to them. I think that Union Point, when you look at such an undertaking, which is the largest economic development project in the Northeast United States with 3 million square feet of commercial development, almost 5,000 homes slated to be built there. What you have there is an opportunity that is a once-in-a-generation. You know, it's really an open slate canvas to do whatever you want to do with it. It's all under local control now. The three communities that Abington, Rockland, and Weymouth that host the former South Weymouth Naval Air Station are all getting tax revenue from that now. So that's the real opportunity as far as, in my mind, when you look at something that's positive, not that the fight against Spectre isn't positive, because I believe the fight is. The irrational big energy decision to place a compressor station there in the first place isn't. But when you talk about Union Point, I really think we have something special there, and I think it's something that we have worked on for a long period of time, that we gave days and days, literally, when you count up the hours of the amount of meetings that we had to have to change the enabling legislation, then bring it to then-Senator Hedlund and make sure that he was able to get it through the legislature in time, and then bring it back to the town council level through two different companies, and now then change the zoning. I mean, this has been something that has been worked on since I got on the council in 2006. So it's going on 12 years legislatively of trying to get something done, and now we finally see light at the end of the tunnel, and I think it's really special.
Starting to bear fruit, so to speak.
It is. It's already part of our built-in budget. I mean, it's real.
Counselor, do you want to weigh in on this? Or Union Point?
Union Point, you know, I was relatively new to the council when we first started spearheading the legislative changes. And it was a big eye-opener to being a town councilor, to be honest. It's great to see the progress they're making there. I think they're just going full force there, and it's thanks to, you know, Mayor Hedlund and our state representatives and state senator that have really worked to help keep it going. But I also too want to mention that I think there's been a lot of progress made in the other villages of Weymouth too. Weymouth Landing has seen some development in the past few months. There's actually a tower crane down there building on the Braintree side right now, and we're also, Mayor Hedlund recently proposed some zoning changes, and it's part of a package that will change zoning, and I'm sure he'll speak about this after.
Spur some economic development,
yes,
so to speak.
So yep. Kind of in East Weymouth, and also hopefully on 3A in North Weymouth. And we also have the Four River Bridge up there. It's actually slated to open probably this fall, the new one. So we'll be driving over there by the end of this year, hopefully.
Oh, boy.
So that, too, would, if I can push for, you know, a little help on 3A from anybody, that would be great, too.
Senator, you want to kind of pick up where the counselor put down regarding rezoning of Weymouth Landing in that area?
Yeah, well, actually, the council back in 2008, I think it was, changed the zoning in Weymouth Landing. They adopted an overlay district down there, which is now bearing fruit. They did the zoning change back in 08. We did we secured a MassWorks grant recently, and that comes on top of a PWAG grant back about 2010. So all of these things are now starting to fall into place and bear fruit. And not only are you going to see the DeLagos property finally developed, in fact, they're coming in with their plan and filing their plan sometime next month. We also have about four or five different projects as you go up the hill that are being filed, three more in the next month. So you see probably four projects, Weymouth Relanding related, filed in the next 30 days. Redevelopment of sites that, quite frankly, are either eyesores or not highest and best use, or just vacant, decrepit buildings. In one case, a hole in the ground. So that neighborhood's going to be on fire. That village center is probably going to see the most significant redevelopment and undergo the most drastic positive change in the town outside of Union Point. And you mentioned Union Point. We do have some challenges remaining up there, despite the momentum of the ProDrive signing and some of the build-out happening up there. We've got to really work to address some transportation issues and other infrastructure like water and sewer, which we're moving along and doing. And we just signed a temporary water agreement that puts us on a path to bring additional water into Weymouth, not only for that development, but that the rest of the town should be able to avail itself of, so that the drought conditions we saw and the water bans that we saw in this past year will be a thing of the past, all within about 5 years. So things are really, really moving in town. Becky talked about the other rezoning that we're undertaking. That involves Route 53 corridor and the Route 3A corridor. As you probably know from driving down there, we also have some areas that are probably not highest and best use, some eyesores there. And we're working with individual landowners who are receptive to these changes. So we think that's going to result in some redevelopment along those corridors too. So we're, in terms of economic development, a lot happening in town.
Any follow-up on what the mayor had to say? All right, this is what I want to do. I want to step aside just for a moment, take a quick station break. When we come back, I want to kind of get into the head of the senator, some of the things that he has on his plate for 2017, kind of get an idea as to where Weymouth's going for 2017, and the white elephant in the room, recreational marijuana. Want to get a take, you got everybody's take on that, since that's been passed, and how that could have an effect on your community and on the Commonwealth as a whole. You're listening to Monday Night Talk right here on 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
I'm from Massachusetts, and I like it spicy.
Spicy.
That's why I'm celebrating every playoff victory like a champion with Big Poppy Spicy Black Bean Salsa
spicy.
And Big Poppy Spicy Cigars.
Spicy.
The salsa is at the supermarket. The cigars are sold exclusively on the South Shore and South Coast at none other than Brennan's Smoke Shop.
Spicy.
Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, Brennan's Smoke Shop. Coming soon to Pope's Island, New Bedford.
Spicy.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
All right, welcome back to part two of our all-inclusive Weymouth segment here. We've got on the phone line Mayor Bob Hedlund, and we have Town Councilor Becky Haw, and we have Town Council President and State Senator Patrick O'Connor, and we're kind of talking everything Weymouth, and it's kind of nice. We kind of have the trifecta where everybody kind of has, wears a hat and kind of has insight into this. And I guess what I want to kind of jump off into is we know that at the end of December, the one thing that we saw was the start of recreational marijuana. Folks can start growing their own marijuana, but there's still more conversation to be had. I believe that the legislature actually signed a bill to kind of put things off in regards to being able to sell recreational marijuana, whether it's the licensing. I know that we have a cannabis control commission that's going to have to be put into place in order to figure out what all the rules and regulations to selling recreational marijuana will be. You hear communities that are saying, I don't want this, even though it was voted in by the residents of the Commonwealth. And I think there's a lot of confusion because, let's not forget, back in 2012, we saw medical marijuana. That was something that was passed. That's something that's evolving, and that's still moving along, but people are getting confused between the two. We'll start with you, Senator. I mean, you're somebody who you're in on this on two different levels, because not only is somebody up in the legislature, but you're also somebody who, you know, you may have to hear from your constituents in Weymouth who are like, oh, I don't want, please, let's not let anybody sell marijuana in our communities.
Yeah, so right now, the way that it works right now is everything except pot shops are legal. It's right. Legal to possess. It's legal to grow. The only thing that we took time to look at in this 22-page document, by the way, that was written out of state and paid for, then they paid to get the signatures, and they paid for the legal review of the Attorney General, and they paid to get signatures again. They put it on the ballot, and they spent $8.5 million to get this passed. And basically what they got passed was a 22-page piece of legislation that now the legislature is looking at and saying there are some major holes in this, whether it be taxes, whether there be there's nothing inside of it about visibility and marketing towards children. Right. The Cannabis Control Commission, as of right now, is centralized in the state treasurer's office, which I think that there needs to be appointments to that by DPH and other organizations. So this six-month delay was basically for us in the legislature to make sure before we go out and allow recreational pot shops to open across Massachusetts that we have everything in place. We have the taxes in place. We have prohibited bans on marketing towards children, right, especially with the edibles. And then we make sure the Cannabis Control Commission isn't like the ABCC, that there is some flexibility that local communities can have, whereas the ABCC can come in and overrule some local communities and local licensing boards, that there's more local control. Because at the end, coming from the municipal government field, I believe that the core strength and the core responsibility should be in the local branch rather than at a statewide level.
Do you want to weigh in this, Counselor?
Sure. Talking to some constituents about the recent passage, I think the biggest fear in Weymouth is that our town is just going to be bombarded with pot shops. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where, as local officials, we look to the state to set regulations so that way, you know, every other corner in Weymouth isn't hit with a pot shop where other communities don't have any at all. And it's just, I think it's so important that, you know, if towns do host these, that they're the ones who get the taxes. And it's not some sort of even divide amongst all communities, because it's, I don't think it's fair if one community outright bans them, they still get, like, tax money from the sale of them in other communities.
And we have a situation inside the legislature that we want to make sure that the two provisions that local communities have, which one is the moratorium, which is a year-long moratorium that a town can enact once, that the towns and the communities, and I've gone to Norwell, I've gone to Cohasset, I'm making my tour around all
the district,
eight towns I represent to let them know of the rights they have, because as we put this six-month delay in place of the pot shops, towns should be following along with what the legislature is doing and not enacting moratoriums yet, because the clock starts the time in which the legislative branch, whether it be town meeting or whether it be the town council, puts in place that moratorium. So wait until final legislation is signed by the governor, that the amendments are made to this, and then each community should figure out from then on out what to do, because there is an opt-out provision inside the legislation. You need to get 10% of the signatures of the election. So, you know, let's say it's in Weymouth, it would be about 3,000 signatures, around 30,000 people participate in the election. You get 3,000 signatures and you can put it on a local ballot or a special election or whatever election you see fit to put it on, and have a vote of your town as whether or not they want to opt out of being a town that sells or allows and permits recreational marijuana in your community. However, there's a caveat to that, whereas if you're a community that's already accepted a medical marijuana facility, that medical marijuana facility, and according to this legislation, can turn into a recreational facility,
right,
and that town does not have any provisions to reject that. So there's a lot of work, in my opinion, that needs to be done in a very short period of time in the legislature to get this right. And we owe it to every single person, whether you voted for it or against it, to get it right.
I will say this, is that a couple of weeks ago we had a conversation with State Treasurer Deb Goldberg about this. And one of the highly sought after things since its passage back in November, folks want a license. They want to be able to be licensed, to be able to open their own store and be able to sell this. Where they'll be able to do this, I don't know, because it seems like every community, every time I turn around and I'm hearing something or I'm seeing something on social media, community's like, we don't want this. Well, somebody voted for this. I turn my attention to Mayor Hedlund. Your thoughts on recreational marijuana being here and something that could be a conversation that you're having with your colleagues on the council. Mayor Hedlund? I think we lost Mayor Hedlund. We want to see if we can get him back on. If not, we could still could carry on the conversation here with our two guests who are here in front of me, State Senator Patrick O'Connor and Councillor Becky Ha, who are here, and we're talking about this. It will be interesting because...
Seven out of the eight towns that I represent voted against the legalization, the full legalization of recreational marijuana. I think what you're going to see is first off, everyone's going to wait and see what the legislature does. Then when that happens, you will have a slight moratorium. And then I truly believe that the majority of the communities that I represent, you know, I don't want to speak for the local elected officials, but I truly believe that this is going to go on the ballot all across Massachusetts. As a local bill, I think that a lot of towns are going to try to opt out of this. Whether it's successful or not, and how much those campaigns are at the grassroots level, or how much money's going to be poured into those campaigns too. But when you look at some of the things that are going on in Colorado, some of the mistakes that they made, clearly the oversaturation of pot shops is the biggest thing that everyone turns to, whether it be the fact that there's more pot shops than there are McDonald's and Starbucks combined, or the fact that they've really targeted towards lower income neighborhoods. This is an industry that is right along with alcohol and cigarettes, alcohol and tobacco. And when this is all done, you're going to see this industry probably be as profitable as that. And Massachusetts is a core state that has legalized this, because we're the only state right now that has legalized marijuana that is easily accessible from other states. We are a marketplace for the entire New England region, and you are going to see that with this. And it's going to be very interesting, because if you read the cannabis industry magazines, this is a big win for them, because this is the first state that now they have other states going into. And Maine has it, but Maine's less accessible, and they put a delay in place too. But that's something we need to look at too, because it's going to be very interesting with our neighbors, individuals from those communities coming in.
With the pun not being intended here, but seeing that the wind was here in Massachusetts, basically the seed has been planted here on the East Coast, and hopefully that there will be other communities in the New England area that will, you know, pay attention to what's going on here in Massachusetts. And if it is successful, they may want to enact it itself. I want to kind of go back to you're talking about that communities can kind of put something on the ballot and opt out. You look at when we saw an increase in the sales tax, and then there was, I believe, something put in place, a meals tax, where it was 0.75, that a community can be able to take that money, and that would help them bolster, annual revenue. Is the amount that's being offered, because there is a local option here, is it just not enough for communities, or is it just a matter of we look at what's going on with the opioid epidemic and seeing that we haven't even tackled that issue? Now we have this on our doorstep. Is that part of it? Is it that the option isn't enough, or that the epidemic right now is still prevalent? What do you guys think?
I mean, the local option right now is 2%.
It's not much.
Right. It's insignificant for a community to weigh the risk of opening this industry up and having it oversaturate a community, and the tax revenue is just not, it's just not worth it at this point in time, in my opinion. And I think you're going to get people through initiative petitions in their own communities who are going to try and gather the 10% of the signatures necessary in order to put this on the ballot, because I think that people fundamentally have an opposition towards this. And you know, Massachusetts has made the steps. We decriminalized marijuana. We legalized medical marijuana through ballot initiative.
But a step process.
Yes, and this was the next step. Was, does Massachusetts want to
spiral
pot
staircase,
shops?
And we're on our way down.
It's do we want pot shops? And that was the question that was put on the ballot, because everything else had already been decriminalized or legalized when in the medical field. And you know, that was the question, and it was put to the voters, and the voters approved it, and now each community needs to figure out what they want to do, whether their residents voted for it or voted against it. What is the end result of each community in the Commonwealth, and what do they want to see moving forward as far as their commerce and industry? And I know that a lot of the communities I represent don't want this because they didn't vote for it.
Are you hearing the same thing, Councilor Ha?
In some ways, to be honest, I'm hearing from a lot of people, mostly elderly or sick, that they are having problems getting medical marijuana. So even though that passed years ago, and you know, like for instance, we zoned it in Weymouth, we don't have a medical marijuana shop in Weymouth. I believe there is one in Quincy, but I'm actually surprised at the number of people who were in support of this bill, because they need medical marijuana and it's still so hard for them to get. And I think that's a population that we should be looking out for. I think it is a alternative to the prescription drugs that people are getting addicted to when they have legitimate medical needs. But I think the supplies just aren't there. And again, though, I'm as a counselor in Weymouth, I'm concerned more about what these shops will look like, what the perception will give our town. And I'm looking forward to the commission's report and kind of what the state is going to help us guide to set ordinances, like sort of like they did for the medical a few years ago.
I want to kind of go back to you, Senator, and that is I know that Senate President was the only guy who stood on the big rock and said, "Let's pass this." What's he saying now that it's passed? Is it going according to plan? Because from what I understand, is that he wanted to see it passed so it could be fixed. Does it seem like it's heading in that direction for the Senate President, Stan Rosenberg?
I think that the six-month delay, which you know came from the Senate President, is exactly what we need. We need to take a good look at this. A committee is going to be established that's going to be comprised of House and Senate members that are going to give recommendations as far as amendments and legislative changes. And I think that what's going to come out of this is actually a product that works. No one's ever going to be 100% with any piece of legislation that passes, especially through initiative petition when it's that close to. But you know what we're going to do is we're going to make this better, because as I said, it's a 22-page piece of legislation that was written out in Colorado, presented and gathered signatures by paid signature gatherers in Massachusetts, put on the ballot, an $8.5 million ad campaign, and here we sit here today discussing the legislature's actions to try and correct some of the things that we may find to be a little bit too much as far as, you know, the up to 12 plants per household, which according to the Senate President can produce 30 marijuana cigarettes or joints, however you want to phrase that, per day, which I think is quite an amount. To be able to gift an ounce of marijuana, to be able to possess 10 ounces of marijuana, there's got to be some sort of friendly balance that we can all come into and make sure that our communities are protected, because at the end of the day, the biggest group that's going to have to deal with this is the local municipalities, because the state will be collecting the tax revenue, they'll have the Cannabis Control Commission, but this is all going to happen at the local level.
And you know, with anything like this, you look at alcohol, you know, while folks know that, you only drink so much, and then there's a point in time that you're not in control of your faculties. It's called drunk driving. And, of course, we have tests. We have ways of knowing whether somebody is capable of driving or not. We don't have that for marijuana at this particular time? How do you know when someone is drug driving, if they've had too much? Do we have, you know, do we know? Is there a particular test that's in place right now? Does Colorado have it? Does Washington? Are they using it? And is this something that is affordable enough for us to be able to enable, you know, our local law enforcement to be able to have those tests and not be something that's going to break their budget?
Well, right now there's a position called drug recognition expert, which is inside of a police department.
Right.
They have to go and get training, specific training, specialized training, which could cost into the tens of thousands of dollars per officer. And then after they arrest somebody for suspicion of DUI with marijuana, they bring them to the police station. The drug recognition expert, you know, presents a series of tests, determines that person is in fact under the influence. They go to court, and the court throws out the drug recognition expert's testimony. So it's a double-edged sword. Mm-hmm. And right now we don't have anything concrete.
Hey, can't you blow into something that goes, you're point, you know, point 1.5. Ooh, you're twice the legal limit. Yeah, I mean, we don't have that right now.
We don't. And the only thing that we can do is based off of our local law enforcement, who are already overburdened. And I know I can speak for the Weymouth and Scituate and Marshfield and all these communities, which are already overburdened with being on the front lines of this opiate epidemic.
Correct.
And now we are putting towards them the responsibility of enforcing our roads with now legal recreational marijuana on the books right now in Massachusetts.
Well, boy, do you want to weigh in on this one last time, Counselor?
I think I'm all set for now, to be honest.
Let's take a look at 2017 goals. Have you each had a chance to set goals, whether it's as a counselor-senator? Do you want to kind of give your thoughts, whether it's for goals for your community, goals for yourself as an elected official, what you're hoping to accomplish in 2017?
Honestly, just as a counselor, I'd like to open up communication more. I try as much as I can through like Twitter, Facebook, everything, but I feel like I still have improvement to be made to reach some people who might not be on those mediums. And I think just keeping people informed about what's going on, it really bothers me when people see something after the fact and say, oh, I wish I could have said or done something to prevent that from happening. And, you know, had I known, I could have done more to, you know, put that out there for them. And I think that's the hardest part, is just not helping people be as informed as they should be.
Can only hold somebody's hand for so long.
That is true.
You know what I mean? You know the people who are on top of things, and you know they're the people who arrive somewhere 15 minutes beforehand, not the person who shows up after it's over, going, oh my God, it's over?
Mm-hmm.
You know those people.
There are, but you know,
can't help everybody.
You can't, but Weymouth as a small city, you can look towards other cities that what they do and what they say, what they do for their constituents. And I feel for me personally, there's room for improvement for me. So that's sort of what my goal in 2017 is. Just looking at other counselors in other cities and seeing what they do and going with that.
Senator, Council President?
Yeah, I mean, the goals are vast. We have so much stuff going on at the state level. I think that the governor is doing a tremendous job right now on Beacon Hill, working with the legislature to bring back more money in local aid, which I think is the biggest thing that we possibly can do. I've always said that the best dollar that I can possibly spend on Beacon Hill is the one that I don't actually bring back to each one of the eight communities I represent, mm-hmm. because that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where it goes to the police departments and the fire departments and the DPWs and the roads and the schools, and you can actually see it work. So I think going into the next year, being in the new year and starting the legislative cycle back up, both at the local level and at the state level, it's trying to do as much as I possibly can to represent my constituents and to bring the resources that we need back home, whether it be through the legislation inside of 40B to curtail that, as far as the opiate abuse that we have currently going on, making sure that people have the opportunity to get the recovery that they need, and making sure that those who are peddling this poison on the streets get the sentences they deserve, because unfortunately that doesn't happen enough. Union Point, making sure that continued progress is made there, making sure that we finally have some stability in place in our budget, both at the local levels and in the state, because the previous 2 years the budget's been out of whack at the state level due to healthcare costs. And what we need to do is we need to, you know, finally address some of these long-term issues that have been staring us in the face for the past 20 years, whether it be pensions or whether it be healthcare obligations or whether it be just making sure we have a strong budget that invests in the future of the Commonwealth and the future of our communities. So I'm really looking forward. I think it's going to be a good year. I think that the market is strong. I think that we have everything that we need to really continue to move forward as a community and as a Commonwealth.
Looking at FY28 and the budgets, the start of the budget process, we're just, what, maybe a week or two away before the governor releases his. Either of you anticipating anything new or different, or is it, you think it's a matter of, you know, I mean, they've already kind of got an idea as to where revenues are and what they're going to be able to spend. What's your thoughts?
I think we're going to see an increase of about 4% from the previous year's budget of $39.2 billion. Right. I think we're going to see a continued prioritization of local aid. I think that last year, well, I know that last year was the record in local aid and unrestricted local aid, as well as Chapter 70 money. I think you're going to see that again. I think you're going to see the continuation of these grants that towns are getting, Marshfield and Scituate getting
community compacts,
millions of dollars, yep, for seawalls through the Dam and Seawall Repair Act. Weymouth just got a few electric vehicles that just showed up basically at their doorstep. This is how government works, and this is what Governor Baker is doing, is he's bringing these resources that the state has and bringing them down to the local communities, because that's where people most feel comfortable with government, and that's where the most gets done.
Well, and the governor, his administration, I mean, has developed partnerships with every community, with those community compacts. And
yeah, led by Lieutenant Governor Polito.
Exactly, and I think that's been helpful. You know, and if they can identify what areas of need and be able to help them achieve those grant monies, I think it's important. Counselor, anything you want to weigh in regarding the budget process? I mean, Weymouth has its own budget process, and it's right around the corner, I'm sure.
Right. I don't want to step on any of the town's toes or anything. I mean, they are just pretty much starting. You know, I know the school department starts late fall, yep, but you know, I'm really confident this year, to be honest. I think we'll probably see more new growth than we did in previous years. I think the added state money last year really helped us, too. The per pupil expenditure was more than double the year.
Yeah, it was
prior
increased from like $20 per pupil. It was from 20 to 55, 20, right?
Right. So, you know, that helped us out. So, you know, obviously, I don't think we can have bumps that significant every single year, but I'm confident that this state and Governor Baker will look at how that impacted us. It's probably a small little drop in the bucket for the state, but it was, you know, significant for towns like Weymouth. So I'm hoping for more things like that this year.
Anything that I overlooked us having a chance to talk about, but you want to maybe touch upon for a couple of seconds while we have like a minute left?
No, I thought that everything, you know, I thought that you covered a lot, and I thought that the mayor added, you know, very valuable insight into. It's two separate branches. You have the legislative branch here and the executive branch. And I'm dealing with the legislative branch and the state government and the executive. And when they work together, great things happen. And I think that what we have now in Weymouth and what we now have now in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or an independent or a progressive or a liberal or conservative, as long as you work together to get things done, then things get done and progress is made and everyone's better off for it. So I think that the message from the council level that we've had for so long and what's going on at the state level is work together, blind of party affiliation, in order to get things done for the people you represent, and everything works out. And that's been my philosophy for a long period of time. We have a very diverse political board in council, as well as up on Beacon Hill, and we work really well together on both levels, and it's really encouraging. You know, to know that this is going on, and in my opinion, the best state in the country.
And if somebody wants to get in touch with your office, if you have a constituent, they have a constituent services, how can they do that?
I do, yeah. You can contact Michael Murphy in my office at 617-722-1646 or email me, patrick.oconnor@masenate.gov. And yeah, we're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, where we try and be everywhere that everybody is. And try to put out as much information as we possibly can.
And Town Councilor Becky Ha, folks want to get in touch with you. I know you mentioned earlier on in the conversation that you're always trying to find different ways. Here's your opportunity to get out your information to folks who might be listening.
True. I don't have a luxury of a actual office or anything, but you can call the general town council office, Diane there. She's great. She's our assistant to the council. I also have a webpage, beckyhaw.com, where all my contact information is. And that's about it.
Well, I want to thank both of you for coming in. It was fantastic.
Thanks for the pizza.
Absolutely. Well, I was kind of factoring in that the mayor would be here because he would have eaten at least three quarters.
Oh,
of
it'd
this.
Be gone.
It would be gone. Yeah, it'd be, you would have got in and be like, they would have been crust to be like, hey, no, I'm kidding. But the idea was is to have some pizza and have some good conversation and talk a little bit about one of the communities that we serve as far as our listeners. And you know, we do our best to at least have some of the elected leaders in and folks in to kind of talk about some of the issues. And folks, if you missed any of this, sorry, you'll just have to tune into the podcast. We'll do our best to make sure that we get that up in the next couple of days so you can hear the mayor and the counselor and the senator here. That's just another Monday Night Talk. Until next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.
South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.